The following program is brought to you by We Are Many. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, everybody. Can you hear me okay? Just like this? Okie dokie, great. I'm on the staff of Socialist Worker Newspaper, and it's kind of a guilty pleasure every time I come to these conferences because I get to see and meet the people who write the articles for Socialist Worker Newspaper, all the members who talk about their struggle, different struggles that they take part in. And for Me Too, one of my favorite Me Too moments was actually depicted in an article in Socialist Worker, and I just want to talk about that, one of the most powerful moments. And it took place in Sacramento, California, McClatchy High School. In 2016, a young girl was raped, high school girl was raped at a party by several boys. The things that happen to young women when they're sexually assaulted happened to her. She went to the police. She was interrogated as if she was the one that actually committed a crime. She was, asked if she was a virgin, et cetera. Got nothing out of her stepping forward. In fact, they told her that she should go, take a semester off and stay away from school because of the bullying that she was receiving. When the boys who are responsible for it were able to go and continue their education. Now that story is a terrible one, but it didn't quite end exactly the way that they usually do, because in just a few months ago, on March 21st, at the height of kind of the protests and walkouts around gun violence, ending gun violence, her co-students decided to have a walkout for her to draw attention to her rape. It was a protest, and it turned into a walkout with hundreds of high school students pouring out of their classrooms and saying, "Enough is enough. Me too. We want justice for our friend." And for me, that meant a lot, right? Here for the first time, feeling the confidence to go out there and protest, that Me Too opened a door for that kind of action to take place. Another thing too, one of the students talked about, she said, "I'm here for my mother, because my mother was raped and she never stepped forward. That's who I'm here for today." And really, it just showed you that there's a change in consciousness that's been transformed by this movement that you can't take back. And I think also it's important to say that it's no coincidence that Sacramento, California, and the police there are also the police who, the same week as that walkout, shot a 22-year-old unarmed man, Stephon Clark, in the backyard of his grandma's house. And I think that it's the same police who don't pay attention to young girls who are raped and who mercilessly kill black men. And I'll talk about the justice system later in the talk, but I think that's really, really key thing. So what has it meant? What has Me Too meant? It's not that these stories have been unknown to people, right? That they'd never heard them before. For many women, and men, these stories have been, but it was the fact that they would be spoken in public and they were actually listened to for the very, very first time. And then it started with Hollywood actors, who used the Me Too slogan, which, by the way, as people know, 10 years earlier, that Me Too slogan was started by Tarana Burke, a black activist who fought for young survivors of color. And her slogan, Me Too, was taken up by the Hollywood Woman. And some stuff happened. It was able to topple some very powerful predators in Hollywood and other areas. And I think that it was significant. And it went farther than that, than just, not, you know, it was with Hollywood, than Hollywood women, but that tens of thousands of people of all walks of life told their stories. You heard the voices of women, of some men, LGBTQ voices, which I just, it just to say, take a second to like, because so much more of those voices need to be highlighted and underscored and heard more. Just to say, in terms of, you know, trans people so disproportionately affected by sexual assault, and it's under the radar, I feel like. I feel like Me Too scratched the surface, and there's so much more to do that. There was a 2015 study that 47% of trans people had reported being sexually assaulted. 47%, and this is also taking into account how difficult it is to report these incidences, because you know the way you will be treated as well. And so I think that's an important thing to start. And so B2 started that ball rolling, talking about working class women and what they faced in their workplaces. That was also exposed. And in addition to all the people who told their stories, there were like another person who stood beside them and said, I am listening to your story. I am standing in solidarity with you. And I think that in the process, you know, of all of the discussions and all of the stories, people are rethought the way that they should be treated. You know, I know personally there's, you know, a lot of things you over the years you take for granted, or the opposite, that you should take for granted. And people, and I think that men also thought about the way that they should treat other people. Men and women thought about that as well. And ask the question, like, what kind of society do we live in, where this is so regular? Me Too came out of nowhere, but it was, I think, a part of a larger radicalization. The women's marches were part of that. There was a reaction to the horror of having Donald Trump, you know, the misogynist, you know, in chief, someone who bragged about sexually harassing women, was now the president of the United States. But it was also before that. I think there was brewing frustrations with sexism that was taken for granted and not paid attention to, and so few ways of expressing and fighting back. The mainstream women's movement has done precious little in terms of activism to kind of bring that to the fore. And so that brewing anger kind of like felt like came to a crescendo with Me Too. So, you know, the Trump administration has ushered in extreme, you know, desperation and despair, but it's also, I feel like, it's bringing out fierce resistance and anger as well. It's in this context that, you know, Me Too erupted, and it made sense. And it was a welcome thing for most people, but it wasn't welcome to everybody. There were a lot of critics of Me Too as well. From the right, of course, which is to be expected. There's pushback from Trump, who has his own sexual harassment accusations being waged, who called all of the women liars. His first act after all of this Me Too is going on is to support Roy Moore, the Alabama senator, who is renowned, you know, a holy roller hypocrite, who is, you know, who's sexually harassing young women, and he backs him in his seat in Alabama. But there was also pushback from another direction. I feel like when the spotlight focused on Democratic Senator from Minnesota, Al Franken, who was publicly accused of sexual assault, there were some who said that maybe it's gone too far, right? That maybe because he's a Democrat in office, the good that he does outweighs the way that he mistreats women. A constant theme that you kind of heard in some of the press, some of the liberal press, was this is a moral panic. Women have gone wild, you know, they're going after prominent men, you know, all of a sudden we have so much power, right? You know what I mean? We're like on a witch hunt, so to speak. And you know, even the Nation, who wrote really well about Me Too in so many ways, ran an article by Joanne Wojcicki, which I found really frustrating, and actually pointed out socialist worker, actually accused socialist worker of being part of a Me Too witch hunt. They quoted Wendy Kaminer in the Boston Globe, who said that the phrase "believe women" was a form of vigilante feminism. And this happened as well. I think it's important to kind of know those debates that are happening and what role will you play. And of course, this misses the point. You know, when people say there's been no due process, this is a witch hunt, it's gone too far. The fact of the matter is that there has been no due process. And that's why women had to stand forward and speak out if they were going to be heard at all. And it was an avalanche of that that made any sort of attention towards it. Of course, we believe in due process. Everyone has their, you know, right to that. But there is no mechanism for that for women. And Me Too helped raise that attention to that. Others criticized Me Too because of the kind of women that first stood up. They're Hollywood women. They're privileged. They have a voice that other women don't have an opportunity of. A voice that other women don't have. But I think the best answer to that kind of criticism came from the farm worker, women farm workers. People are probably familiar with the statement from the Alianza Nacional de Campesinos. I apologize for my bad pronunciation. Who, when Hollywood women decided to protest in March, they put out their own solidarity statement to show that they stand with them. And I just want to read in part of it. Even though we work in a very different environments, we share a common experience of being preyed upon as individuals who have the power to hire, fire, blacklist, and otherwise threaten our economic, physical, and emotional security. Like you, there are few positions available to us, and reporting any kind of harm or injustice committed against us didn't seem like a viable option. Complaining about anything, even sexual harassment, seems unthinkable because too much is at risk, including the ability to feed our families and preserve our reputations. In this moment of despair, and as you cope with scrutiny and criticism because you have bravely chosen to speak out against the harrowing acts that were committed against you, please know that you are not alone. We believe and we stand with you. These women viewed Me Too as a door that had been opened, and they were going to walk through it and make sure that their demands were actually heard. Hollywood women then responded in kind at the Golden Globes by making sure that there were restaurant workers, domestic laborers, standing next to them at the Golden Globes and highlighting the cause of working class women, starting Time's Up. Starting about legal defense. Oprah Winfrey took the stage and talked about Recy Taylor, right? The 24-year-old black sharecropper who was abducted and raped by six white men in 1944, a case that was fought by Rosa Parks before the Montgomery bus boycott. Oprah Winfrey brought that Recy Taylor's name to TV audiences and invited people to learn about that history. So in this way, farm workers took Me Too, and they helped bring the lives of working class women, women of color, into the conversation. And then you heard more stories, right? You had the Ford workers, mostly African American women. There was an expose of them in the New York Times. It was very powerful. It talked about the extreme sexism that they faced and sexual harassment. So for people who saw the opening, Me Too created an opportunity to talk about working class demands. And instead of standing by the sidelines, you know, which I've seen happen, kind of criticizing what Me Too wasn't exact, people took advantage of it and brought their demands to the table. Just to talk about some of the stats on the workplace and what it's like for women there, and just for the most vulnerable of women in workplaces where you have the least amounts of rights. A June 2016 Equal Employment Opportunity Commission study of workplace harassment reported that 90% of workers who say they have experienced sexual harassment never take formal action. The most common workplace responses for women is to, one, avoid the harasser, two, deny or downplay the gravity of the situation, or three, attempt to ignore, forget, or endure the behavior. And here's a quote from the study. The fears that stop most employees from reporting harassment are well-founded, the EEOC report stated. One 2003 study found that 75% of employees who speak out against workplace mistreatment face some sort of retaliation. So that's what women are up against. Me Too, of course, isn't the first sort of protest against sexual assault. Thank you. Campus organizing over the last decade has drawn attention to the incidences of rape that have gone on under the radar because campus administrations have put them under the radar. There's people at this conference who have actually been involved in a lot of these protests. Amherst 2012, Angie Epifano, who was, told that she was basically crazy she was afraid to be on campus after her rape. A few years ago at Columbia University, the activism of women there, no red tape, that made an impact and exposed a campus administrations for hushing up these things. We should bring this up in the discussion. In the 60s and 70s, organizing around women's liberation included protests against violence against women. Speak outs played a huge role. And it changed what was something that women suffered in silence about into something that was made political by being expressed and spoken about and thought about and organized against collectively. All the old stupid ideas about a rapist is a stranger on a street corner were shifted, and people understood that it was people they knew, people they were related to, it was people they were married to. And that totally shifted. And broader movement gave women to speak out. And even in workplaces, sexual harassment was taken up for the very first times. The activists built a collective challenge to sexual assault and harassment and posed an alternative to the predominant idea that you just suffer in silence. And in tandem with all the other gains, there were one for women at that time, like abortion rights as well. But that struggle was unfinished, particularly for working class women and women of color. Many of the problems of discrimination and equality still existed. While the women's movement, I think shifted and changed the way the entire world thought about women in the United States, for the most part, many of the gains kind of stopped for many women. Middle class women were able to get better jobs and different positions in society, but for a lot of working class women, those things still have to be fought for. Black women have their own history of fight back that's worth underscoring and studying really thoroughly. The theoretical contributions of revolutionary black feminism, like the Combahee River Collective, that black women organizing against sexual assault has a long history. I mentioned earlier Rosa Parks. I know people have read Danielle McGuire's book, Dark End of the Street. It's an amazing book that just talked, long before the Montgomery bus boycotts, Rosa Parks was organizing for black women who had been raped by white men who were let off. But what was also key with this too is they integrated that work that they were doing for black women who had been raped and integrated with the work of black men who had been unfairly targeted for supposedly raping women or even talking to women. And they saw how linked how closely linked those two struggles were. I mean, this is an amazing topic. It should be an entire talk, and it actually is an entire talk. Later in the weekend, people should go to Akuia, who is speaking on From Slavery to Me Too, Black Women's Struggle Against Sexual Violence. I should definitely recommend it, because this is history that all socialists should know and be aware of. After the movement was declined, there was an ideological pushback. The 1980s were a time where it was like, the women's movement went too far. You women are too. This is a time in which I became a socialist. you know, where feminism was actually frowned upon, and the women complained too much, we went too far, etc. And so, you know, also at the decline of the movement, solutions turned away from collective answers, instead targeting systems of exploitation and oppression, and focused more on individual situations, solutions. More and more institutions like the criminal justice system were looked at as an avenue to solve the problem. Crisis centers and other resources were dependent on funding from the state, and with neoliberalism taking hold, these resources really suffered. And just one example is the Violence Against Women Act. People may have read the book Arrested Justice by Beth Ritchie, and should check it out. It talks about the Violence Against Women Act and how, in order to gain resources, advocates had, you know, who wanted to get money for rape crisis centers actually had to agree to increased policing in tandem with that. And so the outcome of that is that the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act, of which it was a part, created 60 new death penalty offenses, earmarked billions for prisons, put 100,000 more cops on the streets, et cetera. It was a deal with the devil. So, right, so what do you end up with? A further targeting of black men, but also a targeting of black women as well. And, you know, Beth Ritchie talks about it in domestic abuse cases where, you know, where you risk, if you're a black woman who risks calling the police in a situation of brutality, you're putting your family at risk, you're putting yourself at risk. And she talks about people getting arrested and et cetera. And add that to the war on drugs hysteria and the criminalization of large members of African Americans, and it was more likely than ever that women would be victimized by violence and then criminalized themselves. This is also especially true of women that don't, quote, fit the mainstream, like poor women or lesbians or public housing residents. Criminalization does not work, and it should be obvious to anyone who's ever had to deal with the courts or the police that they are predisposed not to believe women. They cling to all the old assumptions from before. What were you wearing? Were you, you know, et cetera. These institutions of the state are not neutral justice. They function to reinforce all the racist assumptions and sexist assumptions. Institutions like the police are there to enforce a system of sexism and racism, and are terribly ill-equipped and incapable of meeting out any sort of justice. The truth is that we live under capitalism, and it affects all of us. So while sexual assault is an act committed by individual men, it has to be understood as a product of a system that is steeped in gender oppression and violence in general. It's a society where women are unequal by any measure. I mean, housing, access to healthcare, education, wages, and where ideas of women's place in society are reinforced in some of the most violent ways. Men and women are socialized to accept this unequal state of affairs and backward ideas that are propagated in society. Women, you know, are sluts, or they're mother figures, or like some angelic figure. And men's job is to pursue. And in general, women's lives are valued less in society. In this context, individual men can be convinced to play a role in this. Like the men at the Ford plant. When I was reading about the Ford plant here in Chicago, mostly African American women who worked there faced a terrible abuse from their management, but also from their coworkers. Women just described, you know, they would come in for the job and someone would take a hammer and hammer on the ding, 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 on the, and then say, "Fresh meat," as the women walked in. Women talked about being touched, being forced into to have sex in order to keep their jobs, and being also, you know, this is also a union workplace. It's United Auto Workers workplace, and nothing was done. Their bodies weren't theirs when they were at Ford. Rita how Myosha Morris told the Times, how she described it. No person should have to endure that. You have to force yourself into a place of not feeling anything, of not having any emotion, just to exist. So here's the situation. You think about that. So yeah, how is that possible, right? And then you think about what's possible if there were a shift in that. What if there were, you know, a union that, oops, did I leave my pager? I think I did. No, I didn't. What if there were a few coworkers? What if the union took up sexism? What if you had a few coworkers, men and women, who fought back a bit and said, you know, this is that individual, that women should be treated equally here? What if there was somebody making the argument that said, all of our, you know, every time a woman is made to feel a second-class citizen, they take more out of us as men? What if there was somebody saying that our struggles are intertwined? You can see the potential there for a totally different story of what happens. Because I feel like one of the things that I learned from Me Too is that, and from other struggles, is that people's ideas do change, particularly in struggle. People can be convinced into solidarity as opposed to division. Me Too had changed the conversation for a lot of people. It meant the fact that men and women can fight this struggle together. I think it also, the other link to other demands that make women less vulnerable to abuse. How about this, real sexual education instead of abstinence only? How about safe and affordable housing? How about child care on demand? How about public funding for social services? How about reproductive rights for all women? Women who don't want to have children and women who do want to have children. How about not being separated from your immigration laws that separate women from their own families and gutting those? How about good paying jobs? You know, we all listened to the teachers last night talking about the two or three jobs that they had to work. How about a world where women only have to have one job in order to make ends meet? So socialists take up these fights in the here and now. I mean, for all the people who sort of poo-pooed Me Too for that, we have to say, you know, socialists stand with that in the here and now. We talk about a fundamentally different society, but we also know that these fights have to be taken up every day right now. And socialists, we think that men and women have more of an interest in fighting together to win that fight. And we ultimately see that capitalism cannot provide safety for the abuse of women. It is not in its interest, and it is not capable of it. But we are. I'll just end there.
The preceding program was a production of WeAreMany.org, a website dedicated to publishing radical and activist media that promotes a better understanding of today's world while also putting forward a vision for a better future. We Are Many is a project of the Center for Economic Research and Social Change. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out WeAreMany.org.